When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
And the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 206, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. I mentioned I got to, I didn't see the end of the Yankee game because I had to go watch my son play flag football, which is very funny, I have to admit. Again, I guess he's the de facto quarterback whenever they want to throw the ball. I told you the story that he out of nowhere just like, play faked, rolled around, and then threw a bomb for a touchdown pass. He did it again today. Didn't move. Just stood in the pocket and launched it down the field. The kids can't guard. It's hysterical. But when he plays line or whatever, if they even call it line, it's pretty much the kid who snaps it, the quarterback and the running back, and then everyone else just stands around. And they have no idea what's going on. So I'm trying to explain to him blocking because. He gets excited, but like they hand the ball off and pick a direction, and the kid starts running, and my son just like jumps in excitement and watches him. And I'm like, bro, turn around and find someone and just like get in their way, something. Because it's pretty much the fast kids will break through. It's not as easy to grab this flag as you would think. They run right through people. I mean, it's not like, but like each team has like the one kid who's got the breakaway speed that can practically run for a touchdown each time. They only allow him to play running back a couple times a game. They mix it up. But like it's most of the kids just standing there, and then the running back has to beat the five or six kids on defense all by himself. It's so, and my son particularly is like hopping up and down in excitement watching him. And I'm like, bro, don't hop. Get in front of somebody. Yeah, you have a reputation to uphold as a McMonagle. All right? All county offensive lineman right here. Senior Bowl, Hofstra University. Thanksgiving Day, the year 2000. I forget his name. I wish I could remember it. The running back I blocked for, he played for Sewanica. I'm pretty sure he was the running back from Sewanica, which was another high school in Long Island in our district. And he broke the record for the most rushing yards ever in the Senior Bowl at Hofstra University that year. Thanks to me. That's right. We ran a trap play, ran right off my ass, and ran for, I think, a 45-yard touchdown. I pancaked the guy. Pancaked him on a trap. I was an excellent, believe it or not, I was excellent on my feet. I was a tremendous pulling offensive lineman. I was forced to play center a lot my senior year because our center went down with injury, but when I played guard and tackle, I was an excellent pulling. I pulled a little at center, but not much. But I was an excellent pulling guard. I also missed the game at Rickwood Field, unfortunately. I didn't see the broadcast. I'm seeing highlights of it now. I know the Cardinals won, beating the Giants 6-5. It looked like a great... I heard Keith talking about it. And I would... Yeah, I mean, if they could bring it to some of the ballparks around here, I guess there's one in Jersey, that would be great. And I like these events. I do. And especially, you know, this year they're celebrating the Negro Leagues. They've incorporated them into Major League Baseball stats, which I think is tremendous. And you know, to play these games like they had the Field of Dreams games, and if they were to do this, I know they've been playing games at the Little League field as well in Pennsylvania, but I think it's a great idea. It's a cool idea. I saw Fox did like a, I don't know if they did it for a whole inning or an extended period of time, but they did the old camera angles and made it look like an old TV. I don't know if they did that on the TV broadcast or if they did it just online for segments. I'm not sure. But it looked pretty awesome. And Shane in Mount Vernon wanted to talk about it. What's up, Shane?
Hi. Yeah, it was a perfect lead-in for me, so thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I wanted to talk about that game because I watched it from start to finish at Rickwood Field.
Yes.
And they did an excellent job of honoring Willie Mays, and that it was actually a half an inning where they put it in black and white. When I first saw it, I'm like, oh, this is some highlight of Willie Mays. But I'm like, oh, this is actually the game I'm watching.
Yeah. And I saw the saw the clips on social media. I didn't see the broadcast. I was
It was on Fox, so it was live. And I saw it on my TV, and it was really cool because they put, with the pitching, all they did was balls. That's how they did in the old days, capital and balls, strikes, and outs. That was it. And it was in capital letters in white. And then the hitters, all they did was average, home runs, and RBIs in white. So it was really awesome they did that. And the second point I wanted to make on Willie Mays is, no, not this year, but not long ago, the Mets retired his number, and it it wasn't like huge controversy that they did it before, and you know the fact that they did it, him playing all those years with the Giants, and you know the last couple of years with Willie Mays. I know the Mets have made their fair share of mistakes over years, but that was a home run move by the Mets. So. Those are really my couple points.
No, absolutely. And there was a promise made to Willie Mays, and they wanted to honor that promise. And absolutely, just for his contributions to New York baseball, you know, playing with the Giants. And the Mets are obviously born because of the absence of the Dodgers and the Giants, and it's a shared history. And, you know, for many years it was kind of Dodger-centric with the Wilpons. But, I mean, yeah, Willie Mays, again, you know, all this, I mean, he's just one of those names. I remember when working with Mike, every once in a while, he would, like, talk to me and Mons and say, you know, certain people, you got to make sure we always have highlights ready to go in case. Like, in case something happens. And you know it's going to take the whole show. Like Muhammad Ali passed away, it's the whole show. Yogi Berra passed away, it was mainly the whole show. I think it was. But like Hal Steinbrenner passes away, whole show. I'm sorry, George Steinbrenner. Thinking of the current Yankees. Hal, you're still with us, baby. George Steinbrenner passes away, it's the whole show. Like there are, and Craig told a great story about that too. He had a band I like, Neon Trees. Their first single, Animal, is a tremendous song. It's one of my favorite songs. Love it. They have that whole album. I forget the name of the album, but Neon Trees has a great first, or the, I don't know if it's their first. This was the first I was aware of. But they have an album with the single was Animal. And they have a really good, a bunch of songs in that album. In the Next Room, different things, doesn't matter. They were in studio performing the day that George Steinbrenner passed away on the Boomer and Carton show. And like mid-performance, Craig like told him to stop playing and said, sorry, the show is just taking a, we can't have the announcement of George Steinbrenner passing away and sitting here talking to a band and having, you know, some band from Utah playing their hits. It was like, you gotta go. Apparently they were all annoyed or whatever, but Mike used to, we would know and be prepared where if something were to happen, this will take up the whole show, the importance of this figure. And Willie Mays is, you know, kind of one of those great historical marks the times. Everybody has a feeling about Willie Mays if they ever saw him play or just growing up. It's a name as a baseball fan. It's a name you hear constantly. You know, one of the great players to ever live. And then around here, certainly Willie, Mickey, and the Duke, and I think you could put the Duke aside, song, you know, excluded, of like those two players will forever be attached. I think I saw MLB Network used to occasionally put on those old home run derby shows where it would just be two superstars, and I think I saw one that was Mickey and Willie, and they would play like a 9-inning game of a home run derby, which is an interesting way to do it. I wonder if they would ever harken back and do that for a home run derby final or something where it's literally you play the innings, you get three outs. So you hit as many home runs. When you get the three outs, that's the end of the inning. The other guy hits, that's the end of that, bottom of the inning. And maybe you could play three innings. It's not a terrible way to do it. And that's how they did those old home run derby shows. And I think I saw one with the two of them. But like those, you know, were you a Mickey guy, a Willie guy, who's better, who's this? Like, and again, that's how I see these old-time baseball players and how I see Willie Mays was through the eyes of my father, hearing the stories. He was a Mickey Mantle guy, so I have much more of a deeper connection to Mickey Mantle. I remember for my father's birthday one year, no, Father's Day. For Father's Day one year, I went down, and I think with my own money, if I remember correctly, with like my allowance, I went to like the local card shop or whatever, and they sold memorabilia. And I got a plaque for Mickey Mantle, and it's a picture of him hitting his 500th home run. And it said, you know, the Mickey Mantle 500 Club. So I get it, bring it home, can't wait to show my dad. I give it to him. He looks at it. I'll never forget this. He looks at it and he goes, "What?" He goes, "What's the 500th Cub?" And I look at the plaque. And they left out the L. I didn't notice it when I bought it. It said Mickey Mantle, the 500 Cub. There was no L in the word club. And I'll always remember that. And I think back to now how I would handle it with my son. And I'd like to think I'd be able to just let that go. But before he said thank you, he said 500 Cub. I was like, oh my God. I was so excited to give it to him. And it's like 500 Cub. And I just experienced that the other way around. Life, amazing, full circle. I just had Father's Day, obviously. And if you listen to the show, I have two young boys. And I guess they bought these plain white hats that they were going to decorate. And for Father's Day, they, you know, you decorate a hat, give it to your dad. And my son completely, like, bedazzled this thing. It's all red and blue painting. Then there's like these, a bunch of star stickers and just beads. And it's just so much. Like, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. But I got to wear it everywhere I go. We went to the pool. I got to wear the hat. It's just, I'm not going to tell him this is hideous. And I feel like that's what my dad would have been like. I'm not wearing this. Make me a simple, just draw the NY on it. Call it a day. Drew? I've got a back scratcher from Father's Day one year. They make all these things for the kids to do and bring to us. It's nice. I remember I made my dad like a little plaque with the macaroni. He'd glue macaroni together. World's best dad. What the hell is 500 Cub? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So I mentioned, we'll get to it right here. A caller before mentioned the Giants' 100th year anniversary thing, whatever. I didn't even know what was going on until today, until I started seeing some of the stuff from the different beat writers and everything, showing the pictures and showing the videos and everything. And one thing that came from it, I mean, it's been noticeable if you've seen him just in the mini camps, but it kind of scares me here. Coach Dable has lost a ton of weight. And then they showed his wife, Beth, there too. And the two of them look fantastic. He looks great. I mean, the guy who showed up in a little bit, not as bad as the Ben McAdoo suit, but the guy who first showed up in the truck, right, and the suit that kind of didn't fit him right and immediately, you know, is uncomfortable with that kind of look and the beard and the round face. I mean, he's completely changed. And it scares me for a multitude of reasons. One, let's be honest. When Rex lost the weight, it was never the same. Rex owned this town as the Jets head coach. Then I believe he got the band or he got his stomach stapled or whatever. He lost some weight. There it went. Never to be the same again. CC Sabathia tried to lose some weight. Couldn't pitch. Had to put the weight back on. Now he's, you know, doing keto and working out with actually a kid I went to high school with, believe it or not. is like his, I don't know if they're still working together, but right after he retired to lose some weight, he worked with a buddy of mine in New York. I should just say a kid I went to high school with, not really a buddy. But, I mean, sometimes you need the weight. When you've grown, like I'm telling you, maybe if I lost weight, I might not be as good a radio host. Who knows? But I'm worried for two reasons. One, just to losing the weight and see how that changes a person. Because again, Rex was never the same after he lost weight. Never the same. CC Sabathia, David Wells needed to pitch heavy. Right? Bartolo Colon never lost any weight. You don't want to mess with this. And then two, the comfortability of now looking good, dressing nice. Because we all remember, and I said this last year too, it's come full circle now, because I said it last year. When Ben McAdoo, I was lucky enough to go to camp with Francesa one year. It was the year in 2017. After, it was Ben McAdoo's second year, after the playoff run, the boat trip, the losing the game to Green Bay in the playoffs. That next year, they thought they were winning the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, I've never been around a more confident group. They added Brandon Marshall. They thought the wide receiving core, along with obviously the very explosive Odell Beckham Jr., it was going to be Eli Manning's last run. They were great defensively. All those guys, Olivier Vernon, Janoris Jenkins, Snack Harrison, Collins, were all pro and Pro Bowl players. Like that defense that they put a ton of money in, every one of them hit. They were going to be great that year. The coach came in, McAdoo, with the sunglasses and the slick hair after that. His first year with the horrendous, the suit that didn't fit him, and he lost a lot of weight. That's why the suit didn't fit him. This losing weight stuff scares me with the coach. But he came in with the slick back hair and the sunglasses, looked like Gordon Gekko. It was like a completely different look. And he was comfortable. He came down and sat next to Mike and practically put his feet up on the desk. He was like completely carefree sitting there with Mike. And it felt like a completely different guy than was the really awkward in front of the media. Now he was ready to take on the world as the head coach of this team that's going to just absolutely take the NFL by storm. We all know what happened. They were awful. He doesn't make it through the season. He benches Eli, the whole bit. And I said last year that I was nervous because listening to the Boomer and Geo interview with Brian Daboll at the beginning of when they went to camp that day at Giant Camp, he seemed really comfortable. He sat down and right away made a joke about Boomer. I forget what it was now, but Boomer said something and he came right back with a prepared joke to go right at Boomer. And I was like, oh boy, he's coming too comfortable. The last time I saw a coach who was uncomfortable with the media after one promising season and a playoff appearance show up the next year and do a radio interview at camp on the Fan this comfortable, it was a disaster. And I didn't like it. And now he's losing weight like McAdoo. He's losing weight like Rex, Ryan. I don't know how I feel about it. But he looks terrific. I got to tell you. He's wearing a nice, you know, summery colored suit. Very, very nice. He looks great. I'm going to have to give him a call and see what he's doing. Because it's working. But now he's got to go coach the team. And I also saw the story that Joe Shane did announce that with the upcoming Hard Knocks offseason, that NFL Films did give the Giants full and complete control over what can be edited out for competitive balance reasons, which automatically makes you think, what the hell is this show going to be? I mean, I hate to be, I'm fascinated by it. I've always said I would love to have the Giants be part of Hard Knocks because I think in many ways, I've talked about this, I feel not nearly as connected. And maybe I'm alone in this. If you love football, you're a big-time passionate football fan, you're a Jets fan, like Fliegelman, season ticket holder, maybe you feel different. For me, I love the Giants. I admit fully they're behind the Yankees. The Yankees are my favorite team, ultimately, my favorite, closest team. But like, I love the Giants. I grew up loving the Giants. My father loved the Giants. My father loved Bill Parcells. My father loved Bill Sims. The first experience of going to a game ever for me was the Giants Jet preseason game after they won the Super Bowl. And I remember my dad and his friend that was in the car with us arguing about who's going to start the year as the quarterback, you know, Hostetler or Sims. Like, that's my first memory of going to a sporting event. I love the Giants, but I feel not nearly as connected to them as I do my baseball team. It's once a week. We hear the coach talk. Maybe we hear the quarterback talk, the assistant coaches talk. It's once a week you watch them play. You know, it's so much more of a team game than the baseball game, where it's an individual sport wrapped inside a team sport. Like, you see the pitcher's face. He's making pitches. He's not making pitches. The batter's up there. They show the close-up. They give you his stats. You know what's going on with them. It's post-game every single night, where it's once a week. You don't really see their faces. It's a team game. And then at the end of the game, sure, you watch the post game a little bit, but ultimately, most of the time, if it's not, you know, if it's not a primetime game or a 4 o'clock game, you're kind of on to the other games. You want to watch the rest of the NFL. You got your fantasy football team. You got probably three or four fantasy football teams. You're gambling on the day. Like, you're moving on to the next game. You're not focused on you'll probably catch it and consume it as the week goes on, or as the next day or whenever. But, like, so I'm open to the idea and love the idea of having my football team on Hard Knocks. I would love it. And now this is going to be a unique version of Hard Knocks. It's not going to be camp. It's going to be from, you know, before the draft until July 2nd or whenever camp starts or whatever it is, that's that time period. But ultimately, to find out that the Giants are now going to have complete control on what gets in the show stinks. Sorry, that stinks. I mean, we're not going to get access to what they don't want us to get. That's the whole point of this thing. Like, we want to see the unfettered truth. We want to see what's going on. We want to see the real conversations. And I told you, and I'll tell you exactly why. Fliegelman, you know why. You know what the number one thing that this coaching staff and this team does not want to get out, their honest opinion about one certain thing that they do not want televised every day on HBO. What do you think, Fleeks? Where am I headed here? What's the one thing you don't want to have to say and have everybody hear your honest opinion about as this season's about to start?
Probably something to do with the most important position. Like, I cannot wait for the reaction from the people who love a certain player to watch him be perfect on Hard Knocks.
And I know.
I mean, Chris,
everything
look what
they say,
do.
They're not going to say anything about wanting to move up. They're not going to criticize this quarterback in one iota. This is going to be a complete whitewashing of anything negative about Daniel Jones. I'm telling you, I predicted it weeks ago. You are not going to hear a thing. Draft day, they're not going to see one thing about trying to trade up with the quarterback. They're not going to say anything concern. Everything is going to be rose-tinted glasses on Daniel Jones.
They also, because they follow them, it means they must have cut out a lot of stuff during the, like, we know they tried to trade up to draft Drake May.
Right. No doubt.
It means that they're just going to pretend all of that didn't happen.
I'm just telling you, if when they say they have full control about and under the guidelines of for competitive balance, I don't think they're going to allow it to be having the talks about trying to trade up for a quarterback.
Competitive balance. We don't want the other teams who already know we don't think our quarterback's good to know we don't think our quarterback's good.
I don't think the term buyer's remorse is going to be thrown around on this. On this Hard Knocks episode. I'm looking forward to it still, but I have to admit,
Forward to Brett's call the day after this. Every episode airs.
Because they're going to do nothing but, it's going to be nothing but positive Daniel Jones. Chris, you told me they didn't want Daniel Jones. You hear how they talk about him? They love him, Chris. You just wait. You're going to be wrong on this one. You're going to have to backtrack on this one, Chris. I hope I am. I'm not kidding. What do I care if I'm right? Here's a little secret. Like the weathermen, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, we don't get paid to be right. But, I mean, I want to be wrong. I want Daniel Jones to be great. I want this team to win. I want the new slender, slim, svelte, handsome Brian Daboll to be the best coach in the league, take over the play calling or not take over the play calling or whatever's going on there. Figure it out. Score some points. Actually get the ball down the field to wide receivers. Put up 30 every once in a while. Win some games. Head back to the postseason and make me feel like they've got a coach and a GM and a regime worth hanging on to. And I guess I saw the story that, you know, there's people who think Brian Daboll's on the hot seat. Yeah. And a lot of people seem to be upset by that. Like, this is the NFL. I know he won. They had a miserable year last year. If he has another one, and again, I don't typically go for this kind of stuff, but as we're watching the 100 years and we talk about the connection to the greats of the game that go through, you know, MetLife and Giant Stadium in East Rutherford, like, the greatest head coach in history, arguably, is waiting in the wings. You don't think he's made a phone call? You don't think they've talked? You don't think the idea of Bill Belichick coaching this team isn't somewhat appealing to this ownership group where they won't have to worry about it anymore? I think on some level, Daboll is on the hot seat. They can't have another. You can't. Listen, if you want to have two losing seasons and then make the playoffs, you get a fourth year. Can't make the playoffs and then have two miserable losing seasons. And especially when you got turmoil with your offensive head, offensive coordinator, you got the defensive coordinator telling you to go F yourself and walking out of the room all the way to Michigan. Like, there's some stuff going on here. I'm not surprised in the slightest. Do I think he deserves to be fired? No. Not right now. Certainly not. If they win five games, does he deserve to be fired? Maybe. Have to see how the season plays out. But the idea that we're surprised that the Giants head coach is on the hot seat. As great as he was that first year, you got to perform. And you can't get worse. And I know they lost their quarterback last year. They weren't winning with him. I know nobody likes to remember that. They were awful before he got hurt. So we'll see. I don't know if it's the hottest seat in the NFL, but there's no doubt. There's no doubt that he has to win on some level this year. It can't be another disastrous season. Just can't be. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Kenny in Manhattan. What's up, Kenny?
Hey, Chris. How are you, my friend?
Good. How are you, Kenny? Yeah, I'm sorry, Kenny. What's up?
Well, since you were talking about before, I didn't really get along with my dad too well. But the one thing I'll always be grateful for, when I was turning 11 years old, my birthday was in March. He said, "What do you want for your birthday?" I said, "I want to go to a Yankee game." He took me and a few friends to a game, and it was the game where Mickey Mantle hit his 500th home run. So I'll always be grateful. I'll always be grateful.
Yeah. That moment. No, that is a good story, and to go see that must have been amazing. And I did have a good relationship with my dad. That's just the kind of guy he was, though. He was the kind of guy who wouldn't let that slide. He was the kind of guy who would order the same things at restaurants and never be happy with it. Oh, my God. I mean, the guy was just such a pain in the ass at restaurants. You would not believe. And he would constantly order, and I don't know why we're doing this again, but, I mean, I got a lot of my passions from my father. A lot of my passion for sports, which obviously led to my career. My love for Lord of the Rings, the Beatles, martinis was another one. I started drinking martinis in kind of remembrance of him, and then, you know, just grew a real liking to them. But he, apparently so does Justin Timberlake. I got a kick out of the, like, it said it more. He said he had more. The thing about the Justin Timberlake story that made me laugh, he had, like, the story was he had a martini. And then I saw a story written, the high octane cocktail that Justin Timberlake had at whatever so and so bar. Bartender said, "It's all alcohol." And I'm like, yeah, that's martinis are all alcohol. You make it sound like it's some sort of outrageous drink. You get a scotch on the rocks, it's all alcohol. You get a martini, it's all alcohol. It's all alcohol. Yeah. I mean, unless you throw a lot of, if you like it dirty like me and you throw a bunch of olive juice in there. But I mean, it's vermouth and vodka or vermouth and gin. That's what it is. That high octane cocktail, bartender says, it's all alcohol. Like, yeah, that's what he could have had a scotch on the rocks. It's all alcohol. Not saying he should have got behind the wheel. He's obviously dead wrong. I'm just saying the idea that they found some sort of crazy element to the story where he's drinking all alcohol. Like, I don't know. It's a lot of drinks. But I started to get into them because of him, and he would order them everywhere we went, and he would return them. It never failed. He would order a martini or whatever. He would order anything. This is supposed to be in a brown sauce. He was the king of returning stuff. That's why to this day, I never return any. That's the one thing I went the opposite. Because I remember how uncomfortable it always was. Because he was never happy. And we would order the food and we would all just wait. The food would down and we would look up and we would just wait. We would wait for his opinion. We would wait for his facial expressions. We would just wait to see whether or not he was going to possibly accept this one. And the drinks were especially ridiculous. He would order the martini, return them all the time. Nah, this is too, I need this, I need that. It's so annoying. That's how I knew he was changing one time. And getting older, and then obviously he got sick, and we went to a diner with my grandfather, and the waitress came and brought eggs, and he ordered eggs sunny side up, and she put my plate of whatever, pancakes, whatever I was having, on top of his, and it broke the eggs, and there was kind of yolk on the bottom of my plate, and his eggs were broken by my plate, and I saw it as she was dropping the plates down, and I was like, oh, here we go, and he didn't say a word, and I was like, oh boy. The man is changing. The man is changing. All right, getting personal. Don't know why. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 2:37, halfway through our five-hour midnight ride. I got you till 5 o'clock. We'll come back, get back to the baseball. As the Yankees get pounded by the Orioles, they make a real statement, kicking the tar out of the Yankees in the rubber match, taking the series 2-1. Have now won 5 of the first 7 games played between these two teams, and they embarrassed the Yankees on several fronts, and we'll get to it next, as well as preview the Mets series as well. The Yankees are taking on the Atlanta Braves later tonight, and later today, about 12 hours from now, the New York Mets will start a big series against the Chicago Cubs in Wrigley. Big because it's about tiebreakers in this wild card standings. And more important than that, it's continuing the momentum they have built even after losing their last game, even after stopping the winning streak, after hopefully putting Grimace aside. How do they bounce back? How do they respond? How do they keep the momentum for the first time all year?
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
He's homered! Derek Jeter homers to tie the game, and there it is! Hit number 3,000.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 2:44. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. We'll get back to the calls here. Talking Yankees, talking Mets, both of them, big series, Mets later today, 2:20, Quintana versus Imanaga. Am I saying that right? I always get that name wrong.
Imanaga.
We got Quintana, the pitching matchups. I'm not seeing anything for the Cubs for the other two games, but you got Quintana, you got McGill, and you got Peterson lined up for the Mets. Trying to keep that momentum going, the Yankees will take on the Braves, and it's a tough pitching matchup for the Yankees. As you will see, Sale tonight, Morton on Saturday, and then Freed on Sunday. So you're going to see some good starting pitching against the Atlanta Braves, and they're going to have to find a way to get off the deck here and battle back, and put that series against the O's behind them. 888 888- 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Harvey in Fort Lee. What's up, Harvey?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I like your show usually, but
what'd I do to upset you?
Yeah, well, let me tell you. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What major league hit the most home runs in the decade of the 1950s when you had Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Mickey Mantle,
yep.
Luke Easter, Sam Musial, Ted Williams, yeah. All of these guys. Well, you know who hit the most home runs in the 50s?
You're going to say your guy, Duke Snider? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's stop the Duke Snider slander.
Oh, come on. Who slandered Duke? Who slandered
Duke? It was Willie Mickey and the Duke
yeah.
for one reason. They were all together. They all went into the Hall of Fame together.
Yeah.
The Yankees think that the top 20 players of all time were all Yankees, uh-huh. and they spent their career trying to denigrate Willie Mays because it got in the way of their mantle worship.
All right, listen, I can't speak to every Yankee fan. I'm just telling you for me, and again, I wasn't around, but let me just ask you, are you saying...
Well, I was around. So you're saying he was better. Respect.
So you're saying he was as good as Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays?
Did you see any of them play?
No, of course not. So I just asked you. Are you saying he was as good as Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays?
Yes, he was.
Okay.
I told you.
I mean, most people disagree. I understand that. How many MVPs did he win?
You could look it up.
How many MVPs did he win? You're still there,
Harvey? He didn't win any.
He didn't win any?
I'm still here.
All right, so no. how many times did he win the Triple Crown?
He didn't win any.
There you go. Look, I'm just messing with you. I'm not trying to have a 1950s baseball argument with you. I appreciate it. I didn't slander him. I just said put him aside.
Yes,
for
you did. I said Willie Mickey and the Duke, but forget about
for a
Duke.
Second. And then I went into a conversation about Willie and Mantle, which I'm sorry to offend your sensibilities, but that is pretty much the conversation when you come down to the who was better. Duke is, I'm sorry, left off most of conversations. It's about who was better, Willie or Mickey. I think it's clear cut. I think it's clear cut that he was the third of those three great players. Hall of Fame player, unbelievable talent, worthy of being in the song. He played in the same city. No doubt, I'm looking at it now. He's got black type all over his page. He is a all-time great, you know, 407 home runs, 1,300 RBIs, an unbelievable great player. You are talking about some of the greats to ever. Willie is genuinely considered the greatest of all time, and Willie and Mickey Mantle, especially in these parts, is when he was at his best, is as good as anyone who's ever played the game of baseball.
And he deserves better treatment than, well, forget about the Duke.
I didn't say forget about him, like never discuss him.
Did.
I said forget about him for a second. I definitely said for a second. Like to put him aside for a second, I'm having the conversation about Willie and Mickey. And I'm sorry. I wasn't around. I don't know. It's genuinely or generally considered that, you know, Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays were two of the better. Like, if you're going to say who was better, you typically have the conversation Mickey and Willie. And I'm sorry to say that. And I'm not. If I made it seem like I was disrespectful to Duke Snider, I'm sorry. I'm very, very, very sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. All right. He was a great player. I'm looking at him right now. Better than I thought. Like, looking at the numbers, better than I thought. Like, this, like looking at this right here, this one puzzles me. Like, 1956, the same year that Mickey Mantle won the Triple Crown, he led the league in home runs, walks, on-base, slugging, OPS, OPS plus, intentional walks. That's a lot of black type for one season. He finished 10th in the MVP voting. How is that possible? How do you lead the league in all of that? How do you lead the league in OPS and finish 10th in MVP? That's crazy. I mean, that's crazy. But he had seasons, led the league in runs scored. In 1953, led the league in runs scored, slugging, OPS, total bases, finished third in the MVP. Great player, Hall of Fame player. Didn't mean to disrespect him, but I think the consensus is, and how I always talked with my father, which is how I really talked about this conversation, and I wasn't around to tell you any of it, to be honest with you. It's the two of them, and then he's coming in third. I would think most people would talk about it, would say it that way. And now Yankee fans have spent their lives trying to disparage Willie Mays. Oh, my God. Imagine this. Imagine sports radio in the 1950s when they had all three teams and guys like that who got pissed off about every little thing. Can you imagine what it would have been like around here? Can you imagine how much fun it would have been doing sports radio at the three baseball teams and pretty much one of them, if not two of them, in the World Series every single year? It would have been great. Oh, it would have been great. All I had to say was, you know, let's forget about Duke Snider for a moment. Oh! You Yankee fans have spent your life trying to forget about Duke Snider. Let me ask you a question. Who hit more home runs in the 1950s than Harmon Killebrew or, Stan Musial? Not the great Mickey Mantle, I'll tell you that. I'm surprised Mickey Mantle didn't hit more home runs. I got to check that out. I got to fact check him. It happened so long ago. Who knows if he's accurate? I don't know if he's accurate, to be honest with you. I'll have to go check him. I'm sure he's right. But yeah, to have those three players, those three teams all in one city, I don't know if we have anything. Like, it's never been the same or never been equaled, really. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, if you want to include Buffalo in the state of New York, which try having that conversation. You talk about kids. Try having that conversation. I almost blew my kids' minds. If you have young sport fans, you want to blow their minds, give them the geography of our football teams here. Yeah, that's right. They're the New York Giants and the New York Jets. Those are the only teams we consider local. They actually play in New Jersey, and the only team that plays in New York is in Buffalo, and they're the Buffalo Bills. I almost thought my little guy's eyes were going to roll over. He was like, what? I'm like, well, we call them the New York Giants and New York Jets. They actually play in New Jersey. And the only team that actually plays in New York is the Buffalo Bills. He was like, the Buffalo Bills are from New York? I'm like, yeah, it's Buffalo, New York. Can we go to a game? And I'm like, no, it's further than Philadelphia. He's like, what? 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. All right, what have we done? 3 hours? Yes, 3 hours. Two more to go. Quick math. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. Talk about anything you want to talk about. I like the movie thing. It doesn't have to be Donald Sutherland. As I brought up the passing of Donald Sutherland yesterday, I wanted to kind of turn it into a conversation of cameos, too, because I feel like, and now there's even more that I'm remembering as I'm going through his career. But Backdraft, JFK, and Animal House are arguably, in my mind, three of the great like cameos for fame from other, from a famous actor that I can remember. So I'm curious if there are other great, bit roles, and I mean bit roles. I mean Backdraft, he's in pretty much one scene. JFK, he's in one scene. Animal House, it's pretty much one scene, and then you see his ass in another one. But like that's it. Not like best supporting actor, not like, like in a couple of scenes. Because I think Donald Sutherland might just absolutely own it now that I'm thinking about it.